Welcome to WeAreTechnology.com's User-Friendly 2.0 with host Bill Sickens, Technology Architect.
And this is User-Friendly 2.0. Got a great show for you this week. Jeremy and Gretchen will be joining us shortly for the news and to finish our history of the comic books. G's joining us this week with an interview with Monday.com to look at remote work and how that works and how to keep yourself organized. We've also got a Q&A this week, all coming right up. The news this week is sponsored by our friends over at WeAreTechnology.com. Now's a really good time to get your website, your phone app updated. We will all open again, and when we are ready, have your technology be at the ready. WeAreTechnology.com. What's in the news this week?
Well, this one sounds kind of distressing. No more TV shows or movies.
Yeah, that was a shocker thing when I saw that come across the wire, and it's like, what they're talking about is kind of an interesting phenomenon. This is created by the COVID-19 situation, where just as short as a month ago, people were complaining there's too many new shows being dropped to services like Netflix and Hulu and Disney Plus and whatnot. We couldn't possibly watch them all. Well, COVID-19, myself included, has caused a situation where all productions have come to a screeching halt, and now there's nothing new being produced. There's no new sporting events, television shows, all that kind of stuff. Movies are on hold. In fact, all of the big screen release dates have been rescheduled, or just more in a scary way for those that are in it, put to no release date. And what's happening here is it is not safe under CDC guidelines to be able to produce or work on television. There's a few things that have worked around that, like Saturday Night Live has a home version, well, which actually seems to be working out pretty well, but that is new content. We're able to produce because we do remotely. The things like the 6 o'clock news is using social distancing, and I've noticed a lot of their reporters, like their weather and some of the other things like that, are actually being produced out of their homes.
We've got the main broadcast people in our area using two different studios.
Yeah.
So they can still interact, but one's in one studio and one's in a totally different studio.
Yeah. You know, so there are some things like that, but you couldn't really produce that way on a movie set, no. You know, that type of a thing, or even a television series, really. You have to be able to do certain things to be able to act out a scene properly. And if you can't get within 6 feet of one another, that's a problem. So that has created this situation. Right now is a good time to catch up. There is plenty of content out there, and there are going to be some shows of things dropping in the next month or two here that have finished production that we're waiting for. So there's going to be a few things like that. But right now, it is a huge big deal. One of the other things that's coming out with this that I'm noticing is the one area that you can still go see theater or movies is drive-ins. And in a lot of different places, they're opening the drive-in theaters. There's not a lot of new content. The last big movie to release was Trolls. But they're showing some stuff that maybe has been out for a while, but it's still something to do. You go, you stay in your car. Concessions is either closed or delivered to your car. One person in the restroom at a time, those kind of requirements, but at least it's something to do. And I strongly encourage it. Support your theaters, support your restaurants, support your businesses right now, because we really don't want them to go away. In addition to jobs, 80% of what's out there is mom and pop type things. And just along these lines, you know, it's a scary time. So catch up on what's already out there. Maybe if you like something, watch it again. But yeah, there isn't a lot of new content coming out right now.
Brain implant and signal decoder may reverse paralysis.
So this is kind of cool. It's also kind of cyborgish, you know, and which to me is cool. What we've got going on here is a technology that's being developed where it uses a microprocessor that's able to pick up on the signal from the brain to move a body part, say your hand, when there's nerve damage. And then what they do is they send the signal and then repeat it and feed that signal into the nerve on the other end of the break so that your limb or whatever the case may be will actually function properly. And it is actually able to restore a certain quality of life. Some of the people where they've been testing this in, the gentleman that was in the test, both of his, he was paralyzed from the neck down, couldn't, you know, use any of his limbs. And on his one hand and arm where they've set this up, he's not only got the sensation of touch back, but he's able to have fine motor control to the extent that he can do things like swipe a credit card or whatnot. And it seems to be working out really well. So I think this is the beginning of it, but this is something that could be a huge increase in quality of life.
Oh, yeah. Sounds exciting. Comcast extends data cap waiver until June 30th due to COVID-19.
Yeah, and most of our service providers have also waived things like late fees and disconnect and all that kind of thing for anybody that's struggling with paying the bills. And this is just an announcement from Comcast specifically that if you run over your data cap, what a data cap is a maximum amount of information you can transfer in a month. But with everybody home and streaming things, it's very easy to hit those data caps. So they're not going to cut you off or slow you down or charge you extra for it until at least June 30th. That's what they said. We'll go beyond that depending on where we're at. Hopefully, at that point, we're able to get back to a little bit of normalcy.
UPS and CVS start drone prescription delivery in Florida in May.
So what do you think of this?
Well, I mean, obviously, if you need to get your pills and you can't go out, that's obviously a great idea. But I'm not sure. I think there's got to be some kind of a cool setup for this.
Yeah, you know, I think it's definitely good to prototype. But the thing, my concern of this is, and it always has been, because Amazon's talked about this, and not just with prescriptions, is the idea of someone being able to steal the drone and then steal what's in it. And
I have visions of people with giant butterfly nets chasing after these drones. Yeah. Like, I'm going to get your pills.
Yeah, that's kind of the idea that I'm getting to here. I mean, and Jeremy, I think you're right. I'm sure they're bringing in precautions, although they didn't talk about that a lot, of ways to prevent this from getting stolen, especially considering on the type of prescription, because there are some prescriptions out there that people would be really interested in getting. And the bottom line of it is it's one of those things that for contactless delivery and during COVID-19, it makes a lot of sense to be able to do something where you don't have to walk into a store and the delivery person doesn't have to, you know, potentially come into contact with somebody that could be infected. But on the same token, it's like you have to ask the question, what could possibly go wrong, right?
Yeah.
iRobot suspends robotic lawnmower due to COVID-19 concerns.
Yeah, and this is a bummer. I was looking forward to this. iRobot makes the robotic vacuums.
Yes.
And they were going to create a tool with blades on the bottom that would mow your lawn in much the same way. It wanders around and does that. And it seems like, you know, one thing's a vacuum. And the worst case scenario is you have your cat sleep on top of it. You know, we've all seen those videos.
Yep.
But the lawnmower is a device that in proper fashion, I think could be kind of cool, although it certainly could be a little bit more dangerous. So hopefully they'll bring this back. I mean, I don't know, but right now they are just saying it's suspended indefinitely. They have not given a date, and we'll see what happens.
Moore's Law is 55 years old this month.
So do either of you know Moore's Law?
That's the one that says the technology will advance sufficiently every 2 years that the computer speed will double?
The number of transistors on a chip will double every 2 years.
Okay.
The law was coined by Dr. Moore for Intel in the 50s, who continued to work for them a long time, until his retirement, actually. And the idea of Moore's Law has pretty much held true.
Cool.
And I notice every couple of years, there's always a story on how, well, we couldn't possibly continue to do this. And then they proceed to for the next couple of years and follow it just fine, you know. And this also goes along with the idea that the computer speeds and capabilities double. And it's the old idea, if you have a penny and double it every, the amount, the total of a penny doubled every day for a month, you end up being a millionaire. That's the same idea of what's going on here. So, again, the stories that are out there on this are talking about, well, you know, we're going to see the end of Moore's Law. We'll see. I've heard that before.
All right, use all caps for IRS stimulus check tool.
Big complaint about people going on to try to figure out where their IRS stimulus check is, is that when you go to the tool that the IRS has put up, it says your status cannot be displayed or your status cannot be found, something like that. And it turns out one of the reasons that that's coming up is because it asks for personal information, your social security number, date of birth, and where you mailed the, or your mailing address on the tax return when you sent it in. And the IRS's website does not recognize lowercase letters and capital letters in the same way. So if you're on First Street and spell it out F-I-R-S-T with a capital F and lowercase letters, it would not be a match. Whereas if you put it in with all capital letters, it would be. Now the IRS says that they're going to roll out an update to the tool and fix this. So hopefully they do. But in the interim, try entering your address with all capital letters. And one other thing is make sure that you're at irs.gov. There's been a couple of sites out there cloning that because it does ask for personal information. Just check the browser bar and don't open a link in an email. All right, that's our news. If you still need some masks, we have some for you. First come, first serve. Tell us about the masks.
Okay, they're homemade.
Yeah, they're using the standard 6x9 pattern.
So 3D printed.
With some Star Wars fabric I had left over from making a shirt. So they're going to be Star Wars.
Okay, we have a limited supply, but if you would like one, reach out to us on social media, One User Friendly on Facebook or Twitter, or give us a call, and we will get one in the mail to you entirely free. This is User Friendly 2.0. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. We're actually continuing a conversation we were talking about previously on the history of comic books, and we had gotten through the gold era. And Jeremy, I know you were just about to get into some stuff when the authorities got involved.
Well, no, this is the Comics Code Authority shows up in the late 50s, and it was started by this guy named Dr. Frederick Wortham. He decided that since he was dealing with a lot of teenage delinquents at the time, the teenage delinquents were citing that their influence was comic books. They saw something in the comic books and they wanted to imitate it. So he decided to start throwing his weight around and got a couple of other parent groups to throw their weight around to say that comic books were horrible and a bad influence on children.
And he also wrote a book called Seduction of the Innocent in 1954. And he went before the U.S. Congress, and there he, you know, obviously developed some sort of credibility. And it was during that era where people, oh, if you're Dr. So-and-so, we're going to listen to you.
Right. Right.
So, yeah, Batman and Robin were gay and were pushing the gay on children. Wonder Woman was showing women all around the country that what they were doing was wrong and they needed to be more assertive and their position in life wasn't good enough. So they needed to be more, which was obviously in the 50s. That was awful.
Right.
I think women had already figured that out during the war.
Right. So then what we have is a decline in superhero comic books and a rise in horror and funny animals and other weird stuff that doesn't have to do with superheroes.
Yeah.
So the Silver Age starts in 1956. And we get the modern version of the Flash from DC Comics Showcase number 4. So we're going to see Barry Allen as the Flash. And that was Barry Allen. But we're going to start getting revamped superheroes because they were popular.
Right.
Batman, Wonder Woman, and Superman had their own titles through DC Comics at the time. And they were still being published and purchased. So they decided, let's see if we can get more out of this. So they pushed more characters. But the Silver Age is where also we get the Fantastic Four, the Hulk, Spider-Man, Thor, Iron Man, and other comic book companies like Harvey Comics. They started cashing in with Richie Rich, Casper the Friendly Ghost, Hot Stuff, and Little Dot. So, I mean, these are all things in other companies like Dell Comics, who had a really good reputation, was printing illustrated classics like the actual Frankenstein, The Wizard of Oz, Don Quixote as comic books.
And I also think that like things like Hot Stuff and Casper was geared to a younger age group.
Yes.
So they were probably trying to get these younger kids interested in reading these comic books. And then the other ones were geared to probably more like teenagers. Mm-hmm.
So, okay, after all this problems with the Comics Code Authority and the Silver Age, in 1970 is when they started the Bronze Age. They decided that's where it switches because we get different comic book editors and publishers. Marvel Comics gets going pretty good. They start publishing Conan the Barbarian comics.
Yay!
Yes. And Conan was so popular that they started publishing all of Edgar Rice Burroughs' other characters. Like, where did I put that?
Should have been Krull.
Yeah, Krull and
Red Sonja.
Red Sonja, Solomon Kane, Beowulf, and this someone I never heard of, Fritz Lieber, had a character. He had two characters called Fofford
and the Gray Mauser. Yeah, those were, I've heard of them.
So they considered it sci-fi because it was sword and sorcery and wizards and, you know, guys running around with barely nothing, a shield and sword, you know. So these comics have become really popular. But the other fun part is that at the time, we had a link of all these characters, and society started changing. So this is where we start getting characters on the edges of stuff. They started dealing with drug use. They started dealing with minorities becoming more minorities in comic books. This is where we actually get the comic book character Luke Cage.
Okay.
He was framed for a crime he didn't commit. He was in prison. They did an experiment on him, and he got super strong, and his skin was unbreakable. So he becomes a hero.
Right.
He was an angry hero.
He was an angry man. But he was the first black character to have his own comic book from Marvel Comics.
And that was in the 70s.
Yeah, 1970s. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
So we've got lots of different eras of stuff going on. And in the Bronze Age, this is where we have Spider-Man dealing with the death of Gwen Stacy, which dramatically changed the way comics did stuff, because Spider-Man was trying really hard to stop the Green Goblin, who was using her as a shield, and in saving her, she died.
Okay.
So, I mean, the Marvel comic book characters have always had self-doubt. They've always been you don't get Superman out of Marvel Comics, because they have to deal with real world problems like, can I make rent?
Right.
Now, this is in the comic books. Can I make rent?
So the Marvel characters are more almost like you and me, and the DC superheroes like Superman are like, oh, I'm dealing with world problems and universe problems.
Yeah. So this is also the era where the U.S. government approached Stan Lee at Marvel Comics about doing comic books about drug abuse.
Okay.
So he wrote a three-part Spider-Man story called Green Goblin Reborn, portraying drug use as dangerous and unglamorous. So,
and this was requested by whom?
By the United States Department of Health, Education, and Welfare.
And you said the comic book people, Code Authority, didn't want to let him do it?
Oh, yeah. They refused to put their little Comics Code Authority symbol on them, and Stan Lee published it anyway.
So kudos for Stan Lee.
That would have been a big deal in that era, right?
I mean, it was really. We've got, you know, Green Arrow had his sidekick, Speedy, was addicted to heroin, and they had to deal with that. So we've got a lot of things dealing with modern problems in the comic books. And this is, you know, and then we're going to get into the modern age, and everybody remembers what all that is, because that was, you know, 20 years ago.
And you've got about a minute to talk about it. So tell us about the modern age.
Oh, the modern age, everybody knows about. That's the stuff we're seeing in the movies now. So
what you go into and you see in a theater would be modern age. Now, you hear about these comic books that are worth thousands of dollars sometimes. Mm-hmm. Where does that come from?
That's the old comics done in the 30s, where like Action Comics number one. It has to be, in good shape. It can't be read a lot. You know, the spine still has to be in good shape, the interior pages, the color, all of these things deal with, you know, who touched it, how many people did it get folded or creased and whatnot. So there might be a lot of copies of Action Comics number one, but only a few of them are in really good shape.
And that's where they're worth money. Condition is everything on that kind of stuff. Yeah. I know it's just, well, listen, this was an amazing history. This is really cool. Send us your questions and we'll address them on air at One User Friendly on Facebook and Twitter. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. We're going to do something we haven't done in a little while, and that's a Q&A. That's where we answer your questions. Keep sending them in. With as upside down as the world's been right now, there's been so much to cover that we just haven't had a chance to get back to this, but we're happy to be back here this week. How do you send in your questions? Social media, One User Friendly on Facebook, One User Friendly on Twitter, or give us a call, 503-766-6264. The show is producing remotely, and we are practicing social distancing, so there is no problem with you getting a hold of somebody. In fact, Jeremy and Gretchen, we're all recording from our home offices today.
Yep.
Yeah, we have a mile distance at least, so we're good.
Yep. I think 600 miles, so that should count as 6 feet. And, we've been recording like this for a couple of weeks now, and it's actually been working out pretty well, a little better than I thought it would, so that's kind of cool. Yeah. And, it's good that we're still able to proceed and keep everything safely, but hopefully we'll be able to get back into the studio pretty soon. So what do we have in our questions this week?
Can COVID-19 be spread by gas station handles?
So I had to get an answer to this from a medical provider who's been on our show before. In fact, I want to get him back on in the next couple of weeks to talk about masks and some different things like that. But the answer is, yes, it is possible. Any surface that is handled by multiple people potentially could spread COVID-19. Now, the way that they recommend, at least, that you work around that is wipe down the pump. Now, it's a little bit difficult right now to find hand sanitizer, and I've found it's really difficult to find wipes like Clorox wipes. So I'm noticing a lot of the gas stations are doing that for us. How's that working down in your area?
I haven't seen it, but okay. That doesn't mean it's not happening.
So yeah. So do watch for that. You want to make sure things are clean. One of the other things you can do is take a roll of paper towels, which are available, and mix it up with some Clorox and some water. In fact, we'll go ahead and post the instructions to that on our social media. Just put them in a container, like a plastic container of something, cut a hole in the top, and then you can actually make your own wipes and have them with you. Just don't spill it because the Clorox will bleach the inside of your car, something I figured out.
Uh-oh. That's not good. All right. Should I really eject USB drives?
Yeah, this is a good technical question. And for anybody that doesn't know about this, when you plug in a flash drive or related to a computer, most people just pull it back out when they're done, just unplug it and put it in their pocket. However, if you want to do it in what's considered the best practice way, is you right-click the drive from your Windows Explorer or your Finder on Mac, and there will be an option on the menu that comes up called Eject. Click on Eject, and then take the drive out. What it does is it shuts it down before you remove it. And I have it's very rare that it's happened, but I have had it happen a few times where I haven't done that. And what it'll end up doing is burning out the USB device. So it is a safety measure. It is definitely an extra step. One of the other nice things that'll do is if you have a file on the flash drive that's open to something in the computer you're on, it'll tell you. So you can close it out and it will avoid data corruption. So yes, it is a good idea to eject your USB drive. Now, one detail on the Windows 10 platform, for some reason, they put the format button right above the eject button on the menu. So just watch what you're doing. You don't want to accidentally format your flash drive.
What is a gig worker?
Yeah, so this is a term we've been hearing a lot more with different things that are going on with the economy. They're changing unemployment so that gig workers can apply. And in a very generic sense, this is a worker that would be like your Uber driver or somebody that works in a capacity where they're maybe not a W-2 employee, but they do their own thing. That's a very 10,000-foot explanation, but it is something that we're seeing more and more of in the modern age.
Okay, that's confusing because there's a giga plant that out in nearby, and they call it the gig plant. And so that would be really confusing.
Yeah, and those would definitely be two different things, too.
Do you like the new Pixel Buds?
Well, I like them better than the Amazon Buds. So for a while, they've been trying to come up with these little, what they call bud headphones. Apple did a really good job on theirs a number of years ago with the AirBuds, and they work well. And I tried the first set, which was the Amazon Alexa Buds that had Alexa built in. And from a feature standpoint, they were very nice, but I found them to be very heavy and bulky, and they didn't fit in my ears properly. And they send you different tip sizes and stuff to be able to try to adjust that, but it just didn't work, and I finally sent them back. So now we have Pixel Buds, and they seem to be a little bit better. One of the odd things is they don't have active noise canceling, so you can hear the environment around you, which in some cases is good if you're walking down the street. You maybe want to hear the car around you, but if you're on the plane, you're still going to hear the crying baby, and there's no way to lock that out. So I think it's better than the previous attempt, but I'm still not going to buy them. This is User Friendly 2.0. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. G is joining us now with the folks over at Monday.com to talk about working remotely.
I'm with Matthew Burns, who is the startup ecosystem lead for Monday.com. Welcome to the show, Matthew.
Thanks so much for having me, Gary. I really appreciate the invitation.
Well, you know, here we are sitting, most of us quarantined. I've been quarantined like 6 weeks now. I'm going out of my mind. But one of the things I've been thinking about, as a lot of people are, I mean, I'm still working. Part of my work is radio, as you know, and I have other tasks. But one of the problems I've had over the last like decade or so is organizing my life.
Yeah.
And that is, and what happened is I went from using a paper calendar to electronic things, computer, my phone. So how do we get organized when we're switching from, I mean, this is a whole new way of organizing our lives for some of us.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good question. I think one of the most important things when you're considering organizing your life is balance, right? People talk often about work-life balance. That's one of the ways that we balance our lives. But being intentional about the time that you're spending and how you're spending it can really make a big difference, right? It's like a low-hanging fruit for a change that you can make. You know, we try to be experts in organizing our lives. I don't think anybody, including us out there, will ever truly master it, but we'll certainly keep trying. And being intentional about organizing your time means looking at your day and even scheduling the things that aren't involving other people, right? Scheduling your time with what you're going to focus on when has made a huge difference for me and many of my clients and the people that we've been working with. You know, if you're a writer, scheduling time to focus on that. If you're a manager, scheduling time to review with your employees and really think about, you know, all these different things that you can be doing. If you're, you know, a stay-at-home mom, scheduling time for yourself, scheduling time for your studies or your reading, you know, these kind of things can be really taken to any walk of life, Gary. And at least that's what I find to be a really simple thing to do.
But the thing is like, so you really have to be disciplined to do it.
Absolutely.
How do you avoid distractions and stuff? I've set 2 hours to write. But I don't manage, you know, people coming in and out of the room, you know, phone calls, email. How do you do that?
There's a variety of ways to do it. It can look a lot of different, like a lot of different angles. But at least for me and a lot of the teams and the people that I've dealt with, it's all about communication, right? If you need that kind of time to focus and be independent there, you can be intentional about disconnecting yourself from those notifications, right? When I'm writing, I turn my phone off completely. I snooze all of my notifications on my computer. I tell my loved ones, hey, this is the time where I'm going to be doing this thing. I have a meeting, I have writing, I have whatever I'm working on in my life. So please allow me to have this time to myself, and then I will come and be with you in my scheduled time so I can focus on that and be intentional about it so I'm not getting pulled in 1,000 different directions. So I think it really comes back to communication, if I were to say that.
You know, there are several different systems like yours that to help me organize my day. How is Monday.com work, and how is it different, let's say, from other systems, To-Do and some of those?
Absolutely. So Monday.com is built for teams, and collaboration can be yourself or it can be with multiple people. But the more people that you add, the harder that it gets. And so we're really built as a work operating system, right? If you think about, you know, the brain working with the rest of the body, so true is an organizing system and how it works with your life and the lives of those people that are in your team. So you mentioned going from, you know, a paper calendar to technology and all those different things. Those are all systems, right, that you've utilized, some of which may have been more successful than others. Our system, our work operating system, has become quite successful, and we've had the privilege, really, to be working with over 100,000 different teams across the globe. And so our tool is really designed to help those teams collaborate, communicate, and do everything that they need to do in context. And whether that's you managing yourself personally, which people do on Monday.com all the time, or working with a group of people. Yeah, it really comes back to that intentional communication and that discipline. So that's what I, if I were to put it in a nutshell.
This would also be good for family members, for managing your household.
Absolutely. I've actually got a longtime client of mine who bought this. He refused to get it for free, even though I offered it to him. But he bought it for his family. He's got six children, right? He and his wife out in Oregon. And he uses it to plan chores, to plan grocery lists and shopping. He keeps his wife updated on the renovations for their house that way. It's become like an extension, like a tool for extending that family communication and really tracking it. It might sound a little overzealous, but he's had great results with it and really enjoyed using it with his family. And he's gotten he's got like a neighborhood newsletter. You know, he keeps his neighborhood really in tight, you know, one of those true Americans that's keeping everybody cohesive. And they multiple people in his neighborhood have started using it for the same purpose. So really can be used for a variety of things. You're right.
You know, we have just a minute left. So tell me and our listeners how they can access Monday.com.
Absolutely. So you can go on to any electronic device that you can use to access the internet. Just typing in Monday.com will send you right to us. And all you need to do is put in an email. You can try the product out, see if it's something that's worth for just yourself, or if you are working and collaborating with people, you can give it a shot there. But as a work operating system, you've probably tried other tools like there. And I think giving us a shot would really give you the answers that you need to see if this is something that can help enhance your life and make it better. So on your phone, on your computer, wherever you go online, going to Monday.com, giving us your email, lets you try out the product, and you can choose whether or not you want to try it out for free ongoing, or if you want to purchase some additional features as well. So appreciate the opportunity to speak with your audience today, and thank you so much, Gary.
And thank you, Matthew.
We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. Great show this week. I am so happy that we've been able to get content while we've all been locked down, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Well, and the internet's full of stuff.
Well, the internet's always full of stuff, but, you know, it's good stuff. I mean, I don't think we can about cats for an hour and keep everybody's attention. So
really?
We got lost at that one channel that showed cats for like a couple of hours.
Yeah. This is true. And, you know, so it's not a bad thing, but still, you know, there's other things going on. And one of them right now, and this was our Tech Wednesday topic for this week, is zombies have been found. Well, zombie satellites. And so this is an interesting thing. And there's a lot more detail of this on the blog over at theanswerportland.com under Tech Wednesday. But it's kind of a fun thing. There's a lot of us have a lot of time on our hands while we're under our stay home, you know, stay healthy orders. And an amateur radio operator up in Canada put together an antenna and found something that was kind of unusual. And what it is we've been shooting satellites up into orbit since the 1950s. And most satellites have a lifespan of, you know, 10 to 15 years. Sometimes they don't get into orbit properly. Sometimes they malfunction. Most of the time they drop back into the atmosphere and burn up or have a controlled reentry of some kind. But there are some out there that they've lost communication with. And this is one of them. And this is one that was sent up in the 60s as a test satellite for the purpose of military communication. And it failed to make orbit. One of the stages misfired and it got into a lower orbit and was never used. So the way the satellite worked is it had solar panels and batteries. And originally the solar panels would charge the batteries, which would run a transmitter on it so that they could do the testing purposes that it was meant for. And we think it's spinning right now, every 4 seconds spinning around. And what has happened is the batteries finally failed, as rechargeable batteries do, especially from the 60s, so, you know, newer technology back then. And after hundreds of thousands of failed charge cycles, they finally just fused through. So it's like a direct wire between the solar panel and the transmitter. So now what's happening is every time it rotates around and the sun hits the solar panel, it turns on the transmitter and starts transmitting this tone. And so you think about the tech at that time, it's charging capacitors, the capacitors fire the transmitter, and it comes down and it can be picked up on one of the amateur radio bands. And then when it rotates out of the sunlight, it turns back off. So it's like this perpetual cycle that's going on and on. And we put up a sample of the tone. It's kind of this almost ghostly, how would you describe
that?
Yeah,
that was really creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you read the article, you must click on the link to the sound. It is really kind of creepy and cool.
It's just, and it's one of many that are out there. And if you're fascinated with satellites like I am, go out and read about them because there's some really cool information. And it's not the only one, but you can definitely check them out. And, you know, it's amazing how much stuff's out there and how much of it's still working a little bit. Funny thing about this satellite is when contacted, the company that made it is still around, and they quoted no comments, so there's obviously something still secret out there. This is User-Friendly 2.0. Until next week, keeping you safe on the cutting edge.
User-Friendly 2.0 is copyright 2020 User-Friendly Media Group, Inc. The views and opinions expressed in this show are those of the host and not necessarily User-Friendly Media Group, Inc. or this station. Music licensing by BMI. Hosting provided by WeAreTechnology.com. Podcast available at TheAnswerPortland.com or UserFriendlyShow.com.